Amateur Radio Newsline report number 1934, with the release date of September 5th, 2014, to follow in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Japan's upcoming space mission to an asteroid will carry a ham radio satellite. A new study in the United States challenges the so-called broadband spectrum crunch. A de-expedition to Navassa Island will take place within the next 18 months. AMSAT North America adds an auction at its upcoming space symposium. And pirate radio causing aviation safety concerns in China. All this and more on Amateur Radio Newsline, report number 1934, coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now, here is Jim Davis, W2JKD.
A news report out of Japan says the asteroid mission called Hayabusa 2, with a planned launch this December, will also carry the amateur radio satellite. Amateur Radio Newsline's Heather MB, KB3TZD, has the details.
Shenan 2 will be among the first ham radio satellites going into orbit outside the influence of Earth's gravity. The relatively small bird will be put into an elliptic orbit around the Sun and travel to an orbit between Venus and Mars. Its inclination will be almost 0 degrees, which means Shenan 2 will stay in the Earth's equatorial plane. Its distance from the Sun will be between 0.7 and 1.3 astronomical units. An astronomical unit is 149,597,871 kilometers, which equals to about 92,955,807 miles. Looking at its technology, Shenan 2 is described as a polyhedron measuring 490 by 490 by 475 millimeters and weighing in at 17 kilograms. It was built in Japan by students at Kyushu Institute of Technology and carries a Mode J linear transponder for amateur radio communications along with CW and WSJT beacons. The satellite will operate on 437.505 MHz for its CW beacon and 437.385 MHz for the WSJT telemetry. The inverting CW and SSB transponders will uplink on 2 meters from 145.940 to 145.960 MHz using lower sideband. The downlink will use 435.280 to 435.260 MHz on upper sideband. All in all, a very ambitious project for ham radio in space. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Heather Emby, KB3TZD reporting.
Another amateur radio satellite called ArtSat 2 Despatch will also be carried into space on the same launch. More is on the web at tinyurl.com/ham-radio-orbital-mission. There may not be as much of a spectrum crunch as broadband providers and government officials claim. Amateur Radio Newsline's Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, is in the newsroom with the details.
J. Armin Musi is a managing director at Golden Associates. Alok Mehta is a doctoral candidate at the University of Southern California, and the two have authored a paper on the so-called spectrum crunch. In it, the two researchers find that the estimates for future demand for wireless spectrum made by the FCC and other government agencies have been clearly overstated. Nonetheless, they have remained the basis of policy direction on this issue. The paper points out that the National Broadband Plan spectrum shortage estimate of 275 megahertz by the end of 2014 and an International Telecommunications Union radio endorsed estimate of a spectrum shortage of 1,280 to 1,720 megahertz by 2020 are two examples of overstated demand. The paper continues by saying the potential for persistent bias in these projections may allow policy errors based on these data sources to compound over time, as opposed to being self-correcting. One source the FCC relied on to help advance its broadband plan was Cisco Corporation's forecast of mobile traffic in North America. But the research paper claims that the last 7 Cisco forecasts have made overstatements nearly twice as often as understatements, and that the magnitude of overstatements is greater than that of the underestimates. Given the unreliability of the demand projections for wireless spectrum, the paper says that regulators should focus on spectrum policy decisions that maximize reversibility and or flexibility, this so that they can make timely and proportional adjustments to allocations as required. This study is important to the ham radio community because several UHF and microwave allocations could be adversely affected by whatever happens in spectrum reallocation over the next several years. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF in Los Angeles. Jim?
The research paper carries the title Overestimating Wireless Demand, Policy and Investment Implications of Upward Bias in Mobile Data Forecasting. It'll be presented later this month at the 42nd Telecom Policy Research Conference to be held in Washington, D.C. You can find the entire text on the web at tinyurl.com/no-spectrum-crunch. Some news from the ARRL DXCC desk. ARRL staff liaison Dave Patton, NN1N, reports that A52JR, 4W/HB9FLX, 4W/N1YC, and 4W/PE7T have all been approved for DXCC credit. If you have had cards for these operations rejected in a recent application, please send an email to the ARRL DXCC desk at dxccadmin@arrl.org, and you'll be placed on the list for an update. KP1-5 Project has announced that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has agreed to allow an amateur radio operation from Navassa National Wildlife Refuge. This to occur within the next 18 months as coordinated with the agency's workflow. According to a press release over the last year, the KP1-5 Project had numerous meetings with various levels of U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service management. As with the DeSessio operation in 2009, the service has requested proposals for the amateur radio operation from those individuals and groups that have already applied for such special use permits in the past. The KP1-5 project says it'll be submitting a proposal and hoping to be selected. Updates will be posted at kp1-5.com. Zoro Miyazawa, JH1AJT, will be visiting the state of Eritrea with a member of Japan's House of Representatives and several others. This from September the 15th until the 22nd as a part of the mission for the Foundation for Global Children. During their time in Eritrea, the group will have meetings with that nation's ministries of health, transportation, communications, education, foreign affairs, information, and the Eritrean Sports Commission. Eritrea's ambassador to Japan will also be at the meetings. Now, one of the main objectives of this trip is to finalize a draft memorandum of understanding regarding the Eritrea and Japan sports collaboration that'll run through the year 2020. Through this project, both nations will make efforts to promote sports for the handicapped in Eritrea and to improve the environments as such events are held in. The foundation will also support activities for the betterment of education and sanitation for the children of Eritrea. During the stay, JH1AJT says that he'll try and get on the air, but that his time for operating will be very limited. If he does make it on the airwaves, say listen out for him on Thursday, September the 18th, mainly on CW and single sideband. As we go to air, the call sign he'll be using is still unknown. K2HVN will be active stroke V09 from Bermuda from November the 3rd through the 10th. He plans to operate 17 and 20 meters using CW and single sideband and 30 meters on CW only. While not truly rare, this operation marks the first DX adventure for K2HVN, and we know that you'll join us in wishing him all the best. If you do make a contact, please QSL via his home address. Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the KD8KCF repeater serving Toledo, Ohio. The FCC has proposed a fine of $22,000 against James Engel of Lewiston, New York. This for allegedly operating a radio transmitter without the requisite commission authorization and causing interference to other users of Channel 32 in the 11-meter Citizens Radio service. Amateur Radio Newsline's Skeeter Nash, N5ASH, reports.
The story goes back to October 23rd of 2013. That's when agents from the FCC's Philadelphia office, responding to a complaint from a CB operator on 27.325 megahertz, tracked the interfering transmissions to James Engel's location. During their monitoring, the agents say that they heard a person that they claim was Engel repeatedly interrupt the transmissions of another CB operator. On October 24th, the agents returned and inspected Engel's CB station. At that time, they discovered two non-certified linear amplifiers. The FCC said Engel admitted that he used one of the power amplifiers during his operations the previous evening. An on-site test proved that the amplifier in question was capable of 148 watts output and thereby making the CB radio station non-compliant with Commission Part 95 regulations. Now, in issuing the $22,000 notice of apparent liability, the commission notes that the base forfeiture for operations without authorization is $10,000, and the base forfeiture amount for interference to radio communications is $7,000. However, the agency retains the legal right to upwardly adjust the proposed fine based on various factors in a given case. Noting that prior to October 23, 2013, that Engel had received two written warnings from the Enforcement Bureau advising him that operating a linear was against its Part 95 rules, that his case warrants an upward adjustment in the forfeiture amount of $5,000. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Skeeter Nash, N5ASH.
This $5,000 upward adjustment brings the total proposed fine to the $22,000 mark, to which Engel was given the customary 30 days to pay the fine or file an appeal. An Austin, Texas man is facing assault charges after police say he tossed a drone aircraft and an amateur radio transceiver over the fence because he was tired of his neighbor getting in his head. According to the arrest affidavit filed by Austin police, Stephen Anthony Garza stormed into Matthew Hammond's yard while Hammond's was using his amateur radio equipment to talk with his father. Hammond's, who owns the call sign KE5WRU, told police Garza charged him while making gestures indicating he was looking to fight. Hammond's then told officers Garza first broke into his radio's antenna and then headbutted him. At this point, KE5WRU went inside his home, where he watched as Garza allegedly threw Hammond's Yaesu transceiver and a personal DJI Phantom drone over the fence, causing an estimated $4,000 in damage. Garza claimed to the officers Hammond's was using the equipment to spy on him and using triangulation to speak to him in his head. Garza was taken into custody and booked into the Travis County Jail on charges of assault, causing bodily injury and criminal mischief. At last report, he was still being held in lieu of $10,000 bond. The broadcasting community has sued the Federal Communications Commission over rules for an upcoming spectrum reallocation bid, as we hear from Amateur Radio Newsline's KK6ITB.
On Monday, August 18th, television and radio broadcasters filed a lawsuit against the regulatory agency over its rules for an upcoming spectrum auction in 2015. Next year's auction, which was ordered by Congress, forces the FCC to buy back portions of what is now broadcast spectrum and then resell it to wireless broadband providers. The latter are companies that are in need of additional band space to meet subscribers' demands for added data and numerous streaming services. In the suit, the National Association of Broadcasters argues that the FCC rules for next year's auction would allow fewer people to access over-the-air stations while at the same time forcing broadcasters to spend hundreds of millions of dollars out of their own pockets in a process known as repacking. Repacking is a fancy way of saying that stations would have to once again change frequency and in some cases may have to share a channel with other broadcasters. I'm Ralph Squillaci, KK6ITB.
An FCC spokesperson said in a statement that the commission was confident that its plan fulfills the mandates established by Congress on this complex matter. The September 2014 issue of the free amateur television magazine CQ-DATV is now available for download. This month's issue contains articles on the Max 7456 OSD computer USB controller, the DATV Express project update, and the latest digital amateur television news. You can download your copy as a PDF file at tinyurl.com/CQ-DATV-September. After several years in limbo after losing its site, the OH-KY-IN Amateur Radio Society Hamfest is back. According to Bruce Vanslow, NABV, the new Hamfest will take place on Sunday, September 21st at the Aiken High School in Cincinnati, Ohio, from 8 in the morning till 2 in the afternoon Eastern Time. According to NABV, this is an air-conditioned indoor venue, so the Hamfest will take place, rain or shine. It's time once again to get your kicks on Route 66. This is the annual Route 66 on-the-air operation. Takes place from September 6th to the 15th. Route 66 is the famed 2,451-mile highway, opened back in 1926, connecting Chicago, Illinois with Los Angeles, California. It was immortalized in the 1960s with the television show of the same name. With the introduction of the interstate highway system, Route 66 began its decline and was eventually replaced by the new superhighways. On June 27, 1985, the government decertified the highway and U.S. 66 ceased to exist. Now, in 2014, some 21 special event stations located cities along the route will join together for the 15th annual Route 66 on the air. Operations are planned for all bands using all modes. The certificate will be available to those who work at least one of these stations. Complete information is available on the Citrus Belt Amateur Radio Club website at www.w6jbt.org. In preparation for its upcoming 2014 Space Symposium, AMSAT North America is seeking donations of specialty items for a fundraising auction to be held at the event. Proceeds from the auction will help supplement the Fox satellite and amateur radio on the International Space Station and other AMSAT projects. Donated items should have a minimum value of $100 and are not necessarily limited to amateur radio. This year's AMSAT Space Symposium will be in Baltimore, Maryland from October the 10th through the 12th. More information is at www.amsat.org. Some names in the news. First up is Tim Duffy. He's K3LR. And he's announced that the 2014 Dayton Hamvention Antenna Forum slide presentations in PDF form are now posted online at www.k3lr.com. To download and view, simply click on the left side box marked Dayton Antenna Summary. In addition to the latest set of presentations, those going back as far as 2004 are also available. Wolf Harith, OE1WHC, of the Austrian Broadcasting Corporation, has informed the Ohiopen DX Bulletin that several of the 2014 Friedrichshafen Ham Radio Convention PowerPoint lectures are now available online. These include such topics as Yagi and Quad Antennas for High-Frequency Shortwave with Martin Steyer, DK7ZB, the Enigma, and other famous cipher machines that was presented by Tom Pereira, W1TP. And the FT5ZM Amsterdam Island De-Expedition by Ralph Fedor, K0IR. Look for them at www.dokufunk.org/talk. This is Ham Radio News for today's radio amateur. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, with links to the world from our only official website at www.arnewsline.org. And being relayed by the volunteer services of the following radio amateur. The United States is not the only place where pirate broadcasters appear to be thriving. Now comes word out of China that law enforcement agencies there have uncovered unlicensed stations operating in some cities and provinces that could have disrupted communications between pilots and air traffic controllers, but not for political or anti-government purposes. According to a news report, these are most commonly homegrown FM commercial stations whose transmitters have already caused problems for airports in some locations. A commercial airline pilot was quoted as saying that his in-flight navigation system and communications with control towers was often disturbed by these unlicensed radio broadcasts. The Beijing Municipal Bureau of Radio and Television recently uncovered a pirate radio station that was transmitting advertisements. Now, these stations try to sell ads for escort agencies, medical products, and other services. The Bureau recently seized a 2,000-watt transmitter whose signal could reach most parts of the city. A more in-depth look at this problem and what the authorities in China are trying to do to combat it is at tinyurl.com/pirate-radio-in-China. The United Kingdom-produced television show The TX Factor is now available in a version especially for French speakers. TX Factor is the only European television program devoted exclusively to amateur radio. Episode number one is now available with French subtitles thanks to the work of F6FVY, F8BXI, and F8GQH. That same team plans to do the same with the rest of the show's episodes. To view the TX Factor with or without the French subtitles, simply take your web browser to www.txfactor.co.uk. After a decade-long journey, the European Space Agency's Rosetta spacecraft, carrying three NASA instruments, became the first to rendezvous with a comet. This following the last of a series of 10 rendezvous maneuvers that began in May to adjust Rosetta's speed and trajectory to gradually match those of comet number 67P. These trajectory adjustments proved successful, even though the comet and spacecraft were some 252 million miles from the Earth at the time. At last report, Rosetta is some 62 miles above the comet's surface. Its first mission will be to fly a number of triangular-shaped trajectories in front of 67P, which will likely have been completed by the time this newscast goes to air. Meanwhile, the spacecraft's instruments will provide a detailed scientific study of the comet while scanning its surface to identify a target site for its lander named Philae. As many as five possible landing sites will be identified before the primary site is identified in mid-September. The final timeline for the sequence of events for deploying Philae will be confirmed in the middle of October. Meanwhile, the latest images of the comet taken by Rosetta are available to view at www.nasa.gov/Rosetta. On the air, Spain's Football League team's ham radio awards and trophies will be available to any licensed amateur radio operator worldwide. This by providing proof of valid contacts made with the 20 special event stations using the special EG prefix between September 9th and the 29th. The full list of EG stations and all other pertinent information on this award program is online at www.eafltaward.com. The Malaysian Amateur Radio League will be sponsoring that nation's 2014 National Field Day for 24 hours beginning from Monday, September 15th, and concluding on Tuesday, the 16th. Like other field day operations around the world, all those participating in this event are requested to use only batteries or a generator to power their station's equipment. An overview of this year's Malaysian National Field Day is online and printed in this week's Amateur Radio Newsline report. In DX, five operators will be operational as BO0D from Tung Yin Island between September the 13th and the 20th. Activity will be on all HF bands using CW sideband and the digital modes, QSL via the BV Bureau. JI3DST will be active stroke 5 from Shodo Island in the Kajawa Prefecture between September 20th and the 22nd. Operation will be on 40 through 6 meters using CW sideband, FM, and RIDI. QSL via his home call sign, director via the Bureau. LU5BE, LU8EFF, and LU3ALL will be active stroke T from Pumamarca Jujuy region in Argentina from September the 24th through the 30th. Operations will be on 80 through 10 meters using CW sideband. They'll also try and have a beacon on 6 meters. You can QSL via LU8EFF. Depending on transportation, G4DBW should be active as ZD8RH from Ascension Island between September 22nd through the 30th. Operations will be mainly on CW, QSL via direct, G4DBW, or via the RSGB Bureau. But be aware that the Bureau replies can take up to 18 months. IZ1MHY will be operational as 5H1MD from Zanzibar Island between September the 28th and October the 10th. Activity will be on 20 through 6 meters using single sideband, CW, and the digital modes. QSL via the home call sign, bureau, or direct. See his listing on QRZ.com for more details. Lastly, KC0W will be active stroke HH5 from Haiti between January the 11th and February the 3rd, 2015. As of airtime, his operations will be on 160, 180, and 40 meters using CW only. QSL direct via KC0W. And finally, last year, the Voyager 1 mission control team announced that the spacecraft had reached interstellar space. But many in the academic community remain skeptical. Now, two researchers working with the spacecraft are looking to put any doubt to rest with a new test designed to show conclusively whether or not Voyager 1 has made it into interstellar space. Amateur Radio Newsline's Stephen Kinford, NAWB, has the details.
According to the Space Reporter, the test will determine whether the spacecraft is inside or outside the heliosphere. That's a so-called bubble of solar particles and magnetic fields that the sun creates around itself. The researchers who developed the test believe that Voyager 1 will cross out of its current layer of the heliosphere within the next year or two. When that occurs, astrophysicists expect to see a reversal in the magnetic field around the spacecraft. The lack of a reversal should show that Voyager 1 is still inside the heliosphere. That said, other information already in the hands of researchers points to the fact that Voyager 1 has already left the heliosphere. After gathering data from a solar eruption that took particles around the probe, scientists determined that the density of the spacecraft's surroundings was much higher than the figures taken in earlier measurements when Voyager 1 had yet to cross into interstellar space. It currently takes radio signals from Voyager 1 over 17 hours to reach Earth. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Stephen Kinford, NAWB reporting.
Voyager 1 and Voyager 2 were both launched in 1977. Their initial goal was to simply study the planets of our solar system. Now, a quarter of a century later, both probes are still operational. Predictions are that Voyager 2 will likely follow Voyager 1 and enter interstellar space in a few years. A more detailed look at this experiment is on the web at tinyurl.com/latest-on-voyager-1. With thanks to Allen Labs, AMSAT, the ARRL, CQ Magazine, the FCC, the Ohio Penn, DX Bulletin, Radio Netherlands, RAIN, the RSGB, the South African Radio League, the Southgate News, Twit TV, Australia's WIA News, and you, our listeners, that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website, located at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, with Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, at the editor's desk, I'm Jim Davis, W2JKD in Vero Beach, Florida, saying 73, and we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2014, all rights are reserved.